Today's February 13th, it's public policy. We're starting the topic number four, which is laws of Rodef and Mesira. Rodef, the law of Rodef is manifests itself in many different ways in the Gemara and the Midrashim. The simple pasuk that starts is as follows. It says that if a man is sleeping with a woman who is engaged to be married to another man, so the Torah says there's a difference between whether this is taking place in the city or in the field. Okay, the Gemara in Sanhedrin darshans that the city and the field is just a function of whether she went willingly to him or not. We do not halachically differentiate between the city and the field. It's a question of whether she went willingly to him. I'm not going to get into now the biblical parshanut. It's not a parshanut class. But then the Torah says, if it's in the field, then she is innocent, because there's nothing she could do. If she would scream out, no one would hear her, right? Because if someone would hear her, that person would have to kill the rapist to save her. That's the essential point of the way the pasuk appears, right? So, Eik ve'ein Moshiach la. If she would call out, there's no one to save her. What's the implication? That if someone would hear a woman calling out while being raped, single or married or engaged or whatever it is, then the person hearing that cry should, if necessary, kill him. This is not even if she's in the process of being raped, but he's threatening her to do that. Okay? And the Torah compares this to someone who's chasing after someone to kill them. So the halacha is that if someone is chasing after another person to either A, take their life, or sexually abuse them, a person watching this has not only the right, but the obligation of taking out the pursuer. Okay, everyone clear with that? Anybody disagree with this?
You have to kill her?
If the only way to save the person in pursuit of the sexual abuse or life threat, right? The only way to save that person from this is to actually take out, and the burden is on the pursuer. You don't have to say, what can I do? I know I could have taken out his leg, but I the burden is on the pursuer. Okay. All right. This is the basic law of Rodef, and the law is on two issues: sexual abuse and threat of life. Okay. That is the definition of the Rodef. Okay. The halacha says, the Gemara is that the one witnessing this redifa, this pursuit, not only has the right, but the obligation. If he does not save the person in pursuit, he is over on lo ta'amod al dam re'echa. This is not true, by the way, of the fact that that person is being robbed. You see someone who is being abused of their property. Someone is stealing from them. If their property is in danger, you cannot take out the pursuer who wants to take your wallet. Right? That was poorly phrased. You cannot take out the person who's taking someone else's wallet. It's different when you're the one being robbed, or how do you know what robbery is going to turn to? How do I know if he has a gun to my head and that if he gets my wallet, he's just going to walk away with that? Right?
Why? We're not interested.
Because for you, it's you, it's someone else.
Somebody else, like it's still like that.
Take out his leg. You can't kill him. Save the other person. If it's you, let me tell you why we have the difference between it's you.
I'm saying something.
Okay, sorry. No, it's with you, these are psukim, not in. I'm just quoting psukim in Devarim all this time. Now I'm taking you back to Shmos, last week's parsha. Torah says, im b'machteres. If a person digs, machteres means like a tunnel. He tunnels into your house, right? Okay, what's your first impression? You're upstairs in your bedroom, and you hear someone obviously rummaging through your downstairs break front, and you can hear a clattering of glass and clattering of silver, and someone's running through and opening and closing drawers quickly, right? And you've got a gun in your closet, right? So, what does the Gemara say you can do there?
Depend on the circumstances, how they got in.
Okay, so the Gemara says, the Torah says that it's a difference between day and night.
He
comes in at night, there's a different law that comes in during the day. That's what's written in the Torah. Okay? Rashi in his Perush to that Pasuk says, like the woman in the field and the city, it's not a difference between field and city. Those are metaphors. Day and night is a metaphor for whether the owner of the house fears for his life or just for his property. So the Gemara says, any owner of a house where someone tunnels in, or according to the Ravid, who takes it literally, comes in at night. What's the difference between someone who robs your house during the day and at night? Obviously, yes.
He's a lot more fearless than the other one. If you're robbing during the day, you're a lot more fearless, and therefore he would be more willing to kill while... If someone...
That's a very interesting svara, because I just want to tell, I'm sorry to say, the Gemara says the exact opposite. Because what's this person probably going to face if he comes in at night?
No.
A gun.
Someone home. Someone who robs your house during the day has been... possibly sleeping, but someone is going to be home. Someone who steals from your house during the day cases at your house for a couple of days and sees when does he leave, who's at home, is there no one home. Robert doesn't want to be confronted. He just wants to do his business in your house and get out with his shopping bag. He does not want to be confronted. So if he goes in at night, this is the Gemara now talking to the homeowner. If the guy goes into your house at night, you can assume that he knows someone's home. And if he knows someone's home, right, he has to assume that if that person hears me making noise, that person has a gun someplace and he's going to make a stand. Right? And if he does... I'm going to shoot back, because I'm being threatened, says the robber, right? So the Gemara says to the homeowner, all of this is what's going on in their mind. I want you to be wise to this. If you hear noise in your downstairs apartment, downstairs in your apartment, downstairs in your house, you have the right to take him out. So the Ravid says it's a difference between day and night, because if he comes during the day, he's hoping you're not home, and he may not even be armed, right? But if he comes in at night, he's armed. Kill him. Okay, clear? Does everybody agree with this? Someone comes into your house, you have the right to kill him because that man is a rogue.
Wait.
He's not shooting, he's not pointing his gun at me, right? Why don't I just let him free? Torah says, if you take him out, ain lo damim. Translate this for me, someone here, please. If you take him out, aim low, dummy.
There's no blood.
You're not alive. On your hands.
You're not liable.
There's no blood on the hands of the homeowner, because I'm giving you the heads up of what's on his mind if he comes at night. Okay? The Ravid says it's a day-night thing. Okay? So comes the Gemara to make a different drasha. Someone tell me, ein lo damim. It's an amazing drasha. It says, the man coming into your house to rob you this way, he has no blood. He killed himself as soon as he walked into your house that way. You hear the drash?
Very little ein translation.
Lo damim. But it is a possible translation of this word lo. You're absolutely right. The pshat is, you have no blood on your hands if you killed this man, because he's threatening you. Okay? So, the quintessential threat to life that the rabbis always turn to, tell me if anyone here knows this name, is Sheva ben Bichri.
Yeah.
Sound familiar?
Yeah.
Who is he? What's his story?
will follow Shmuel Ben.
Shmuel Ben is correct.
He was thrown out of the city. Like he was
just, not him, just his head.
Yeah, his head was thrown to
correct.
Yoav.
Okay, so correct. So after Avshalom's revolt was quelled, someone named Sheva ben Bichri fought against David and started another rebellion. David thought this would be even worse than Avshalom's revolt. And he holed himself up in the city. And Yoav got word to them that we're going to raise this city to the ground if you don't send out Sheva ben Bichri. Now, since Sheva ben Bichri was already Chayav Misa for his rebellion against the king, right? He therefore is a... what? A blank to that city. A Rodef, good. So, Rodef Kesheva ben Bichri. He's the quintessential Rodef in the world. Because he's threatening the whole place. Okay. This has caused all kinds of disputes and debates in halacha. Excuse me for using this example. It shouldn't be chas v'shalom and ayin hara. Usually when we do these things, we say it works the opposite as ayin hara. Someone walks into this room and says, Rabbi, you have 10 seconds. Give me one of these boys or I'm killing every one of them. You have 10 seconds. I'm going to start machine gunning them down. If not, I'll be satisfied with one. I'll leave. This is where this starts to be incomprehensible. I started off this class with saying, can you kill one person to save 100? Or 1,000? Or 1,000,000? All right? The halacha is really quite unequivocal about this. And the reason is because it doesn't make sense. They're all going to die. Right? Go ahead, let me hear some
cards. Is there a difference if he specifically points out?
Ah, well, wait a minute. Yeah, that's, of course, that's the next sentence. All right? Or if someone wants to volunteer. Right? Or, how about if, excuse me, I don't want to point to anybody, he says, that one, or I'll kill all of them. Because that one, you can start to say, maybe that person is a Rodef, but he's certainly not a Rodef Kesheva ben Bichri. That one didn't do anything different than everyone else in the room. Right? There are even some, you know, believe it or not, these were things that Jews faced in the Middle Ages. Apostate Jews knew this, and the Christians went into high places where Jews were hiding and said, just give me one of these kids and I'll leave. Right? Knowing that the Jews were, you know, couldn't, that kid is no more of a Rodef than anyone else. So here is what some Rishonim suggest. Have everyone in the room agree on an arbitrary determination that says something like, the person with the next birthday in this room. Again, I don't mean for that to be an hour in case your birthday is tomorrow. or something else like that. The person who is the tallest person in the room. Or the, you know, something like that. That'll satisfy the, you know, the conditions. Because then you're creating what you see. You have to be creating, right? Everyone who was raising their hand now? You start to say things? You're creating a quasi-Rodef, at least in the eyes of everyone in the room. You follow what I'm saying? But... Or a person can volunteer. I'm dying anyway, so I might as well be a hero in the eyes of my friends, right? Okay, so I'm just saying that these things have been in the discussion of the poskim. By the way, the Rambam says that if you give up your life when you shouldn't have, right, considers that to be suicide. It's worse than if you give in and do the wrong thing. Hear that again? In other words, I should have given up my life and not worship this Avodah Zarah. I should have given up my life and not do it. But if you gave up your life when you shouldn't have, the Rambam considered that to be worse. You see, as you may imagine, it was the Jews in the Ashkenazic circles that faced this much more often than the Christians. Right? The Tosfos in a number of places in Shas, especially in the Sefer Avodah Zarah, the Daf Yomis of these days now, where Tosfos discusses actual cases that they saw where people were killing masses of children or others rather than to be taken by the Christians. want to look up one of these, it's the Das HaKeni Bali HaTosfos on the Pasuk. The Gemara says that prohibits suicide, which is Bereishis Tes Pasuk Hey, that speaks of Ach Estimchem Edrosh Mikem. I hold you responsible even for your own blood. Of course you can't take someone else's life, but you can't even take your own. And on that Pasuk, there's a long, it takes up the whole page, Das HaKenim, it talks about cases in the Middle Ages, in Christendom, Jews living amongst Christians in France and Germany, who preferred to kill everybody rather than even have them raised as temporarily or possibly in perpetuity as Christians. Yes?
Back to the case you said, if someone comes in and says, like, give me this person or I'll kill everyone, isn't it also different if they say, I'll kill everyone versus kill three people? Because if they say, I'll kill everyone, then the person who's specifying will be killed regardless. It's a different case. Then saying, I'll kill 10 random people, or that person's going to be an murderer.
All right, and whatever answer you give, and we're going to see some more complicated cases as we move on today, whatever answer you give must work with a potential rodev. But right, not necessarily that he's going to die anyway, but that this person is somewhat threatening. What about they're looking for the hideout? Jews are hiding out in the secret passageway between two apartments, and there's a baby that's uncontrollably crying. Right? As soon as they hear noise, that they're going to test, they're going to find their hiding place, and they're, that's it. Right? That baby is a rodef, I'm sorry to say. Huh? Correct?
Yeah.
Now, there was a case that came up. I'm going to start to give you some real-life cases. This is about 40 years ago. A woman was in her early pregnancy, and Nebuch was diagnosed with leukemia. At that time, the treatment would kill a baby, a fetus, almost immediately. Right? So the woman had these following choices, you can imagine. Based on the conversation from this class so far, she has a choice to say, I'll take the treatment, I'll lose the baby immediately. Right? The doctors don't say I will certainly live through this, right? But they do say I have no chance even reaching to the end of this pregnancy if I do not. Or I don't even know if that, I didn't know that. But it could take me quickly. I may be able to take it term, right? If I don't take any medication at all, right? So I have a chance to take this pregnancy full term and have a baby, even with the untreated leukemia. Got it? Okay. Does she have the right to defy herself and deny herself this treatment? Does she have to take the treatment?
Because the baby's considered human. I understand. Isn't there a Gemara on that whole case?
So there is a Gemara on this. It's the Mesechus Baba Kama.
Yeah, the baby isn't born yet, she has to take the treatment.
Mesechus Baba Kama, it's a Mishnah. It's a Mishnah at the end of Mesechus Trumas that says that until the moment where the baby starts to emerge from its mother. Now, regardless of what we'll see in a minute, where this whole abortion situation difference between church and the Gemara comes in, but until the moment that the baby emerges from its mother, the mother's life takes precedence. Okay. Until the time where the baby emerges from its mother, the mother's life takes precedence. Okay. Now, in this particular instance, I want you to think this over. Does the mother have the right to deny herself treatment? Must she take treatment? Right? So I have to tell you, there's so many variables here. Because if the doctors are telling her, with treatment you're living 3 years, without treatment you're living 1 year, but you're going to give birth to a living baby, here, why shouldn't she have the right to say, let this baby have a full life? I'll live 2 years less. Right? She's not committing suicide by refusing treatment. She'll pray. She'll. Right? Incidentally, there's one very, very important Rishon of note that says that you're only allowed to take medical treatment if you can attribute your pain, your wound, your affliction, whatever it is you're suffering, to another person. Last week's parasha. Rak shivto yitain v'rapo yirape. 10 of you are texting right now. Stop it. I'm going to start to mark you absent if I see anybody texting. Right? And I do know your names. Okay, so it all depends on particular circumstance. Within these pages, and I expect you to read them over this semester, is a famous case in Philadelphia that was in the early 80s. The Surgeon General of Pennsylvania at the time was named C. Everett Koop. If you know your history, he later became the Surgeon General of the United States under Ronald Reagan. C. Everett Koop was called to decide on the case of Siamese twins. Two boys, were born connected. Now, sometimes you've seen the pictures of them, right? That's what they're called, Siamese twins, because the first one that was known to us came from Siam. I believe they were part of some circus or something like that, but they came to the recognition of masses through some, I think maybe Ripley's or something, I don't know.
It was a circus.
So, if they're attached at a relatively low place, these can function. But these two were attached too high, and the doctors said they only have approximately 1 year together attached that way. Right? I believe they shared a liver. Right? But they had other organs on their own. C. Everett Koop was called upon to decide what to do about these kids. If we do nothing, they will both die within a year. And it's a great Kiddush Hashem. You have to read the whole story. It's really quite an intriguing story. It's in your Choveret, and the pages outlined here under Lords of Rodef and Sira. And he insisted that he will not act until he gets a determination from an elderly rabbi who lives on the Lower East Side. Anybody know his name? Moshe Feinstein. Such a Kiddush Hashem, he said, I want to hear. I will not respond until I have an answer from that ethical man on the Lower East Side. But Moshe Feinstein took a 2 weeks, he put himself aside, and the story has it that he was being pressured by the hospital, we have to know what to do. He goes, I'm not answering until Rav Moshe Feinstein answers. Okay? First, let me get back to the case of this woman. I knew her. Her last name was Pinsky. She was diagnosed with leukemia early on in the pregnancy, and she chose to take no treatment. I knew her husband, and I was young at the time. I was in the early 20s. I remember discussing with him. I said, this is our case. They're telling her, even if she takes all the treatments in the world, she may not last another 2 years afterwards. Right? She chose not to take any treatment at all. She gave birth to a child. That child was about 35 now. Right? So I'll keep in touch with some. What's an amazing thing is that this boy I just described who... another class that described a boy who died of leukemia at 21. Knew that family from Yeshiva. He went to in Mexico. But But the point is that she chose not to take the treatment. She gave birth to a healthy baby and died very shortly afterwards.
Is it a lot or not? Any reason or she can decide what she wants to do? Is there a way to
homicide? The answer to this question about Mrs. Pinsky was determined by her own particular situation. She had the right to do this. But she also had the right to take the treatment. That's for sure. Okay? I want to get back to Rav Moshe Feinstein's Rodef situation, but it all starts with this. You will recall that in this past week's parsha, the Torah talks about two men who are fighting, right? Listen carefully, this is now in the realm of parshanut. Two men are fighting, and while one of them pulls back to hit the other, what does he do? He hits a pregnant woman. Right? And what does the Torah describe what happens to her?
She has to pass. She loses.
V'yotzu yilodeha. You just said she loses it. What does it mean?
The child comes out of
carriage.
You called that a miscarriage, right? Because miscarriage usually means I didn't carry the baby to term to live, right? Does anybody in this room agree that when these two words appear in the Torah, it means the babies came out nebuch dead? Does everybody agree with that? Because after it says v'yotzu yilodeha, and then it says v'lo yihyeh ason, but there is no tragedy in that. Okay. What do you do if yotzu yilodeha without an ason? What does the Torah say to do? You go to the court,
pay a fine,
go to the plilim, and make a sue the man who hit her. Got it? Everyone clear? Then the pasuk says, "V'im yihyeh ason." But if there is an ason, the answer is, "V'nosata nefesh tachas nefesh." Then you must. He is a murderer. You have to give a life for the life. Okay? Ason is a tragedy. Today, an ason is the word used in Hebrew for a devastating car accident. Right.
Okay.
So, according to the church understands that the lo yihyeh ason means the babies were aborted from her. They left her, v'yotzu, right? I shouldn't use the word aborted because aborted, when you hear that word, you think that the baby is dead. You abort a baby that's about to die, right? But the Catholic Church understands v'yotzu yilodeha, listen carefully to this, v'yotzu yilodeha to mean that after being hit by a person so hard that something came out of me, alive. But you have to pay a fine because that was probably painful. The children may be premature and have a difficult time growing up, I don't know, or developing. That's really, the Gemara in Bava Kamma asks this question and says, what? You're certainly limiting this to a woman who gets hit pretty late in her pregnancy, because if she's in her fourth or fifth month, there's no way that child is coming out alive. You're really limiting the story if there's a havamina that this means lo yeh ason to the baby or babies. That's pretty strange. Yiladeho, children hit it, coming out of a woman because she was hit. Of coming out alive? No. We assume that they come out dead. Who's the ason talking about?
The mom.
The mom! If while hitting her and she loses her babies, she is not killed, find the daylights out of that guy. But if she's killed, that man's a murderer. You get it? Okay. But the church who understands this to say, yeah, ason, or lo yeh ason, to go not on the mother but on the fetus, right? Now you understand why the Catholic Church considers abortion to be murder. Okay? Here, look, this is a political problem in our country. Someone who is seriously, even if they believe fully in the separation of church and state, but they are seriously guided by Catholic doctrine, Catholic Christian doctrine. They believe that abortion is murder. And they believe they're living in a country that commits hundreds of thousands of murders. Outright murder. So no, Judaism does not consider abortion murder. We consider even in the process of giving birth, the mother takes precedence over the fetus.
Wait, and so you just like, decide that you don't want to have a child.
Okay, now, if you want to talk about that, that's a different topic.
In Judaism, they don't like that.
Judaism, abortion is only allowed in the following way. And if you want to have some leeway explaining what I'm about to tell you loosely, it's only one way. Well, they just said in the Mishnah and Trumas. Go ahead, tell me. Abortion is allowed in order to save the life of the mother, or if the doctor is already saying that the baby has no viable existence outside of its mother.
So here?
Today, it's very popular because they have amniocentesis, they have all kinds of Now, there could be reasons to do this because there are things they could do inside the uterus to help the baby come out more viable. But if they're telling you this baby, we have the imaging, he's not developing a skull, this baby will not live outside the uterus. Of course, then the mother should not continue to take that baby to term. Right?
What if it's like a Siamese twin?
So let's get back to our question here. And you know, when you read this story inside, you're going to say, wait a second, I know from our half hour, 45 minute discussion on this, I know what has to be done. And that is what Moshe did. Explain. Two babies, what do? If they could, at 1 year, they will both die. Their livers will not develop. The one liver that they share will not sustain them. They will both die. What do?
Figures out which is the road.
Well, can you save one to save the other?
But Moshe said, very simply, determine which one, not just which one has more viability than the other. Is there one that's rodeif the other? Is there one that is threatening the other? Because, and which is really the same as the first question we just mentioned. The one that has a small piece of the liver that's not just going to die anyway. That's not the point. Because we just said before, everyone in the room is going to die anyway because there's no rodeif. Rav Moshe to ask C. Everett Koop to just look for a rodeif. Now, in these pages also is another study from Brown University. I'm just going to close with this, and it's really fascinating. And again, Rav Moshe Feinstein was called upon to weigh in. And this was the study. It was based on an actual case. Yeah, okay, but here's the story. It's a futuristic society where all medical procedures always work. Got it? And they ask for people to be have their names put into a pool, right, of millions and maybe even billions of people, in which case, if your name gets picked, you agree to go to a place where they will kill you and harvest your organs to save, when it reaches a number 30. Your organs can save 30 people because you're very healthy and this will quickly kill you and take all these healthy, oxygenated organs and immediately put it into all these 30 people, and 30 people will live for you, and you'll be a hero and have your name placed on the wall of honor. And no one at Brown University could explain why this should not be done. Because when your name is chosen, surely you're going unwillingly. I'd rather not have my name chosen. Right? Now, there was to be gained by this, because if you're one of the 30, right, who actually need a longer, a liver, or something else, right? By the way, your name may get picked up too on that, in which case you get off that list of 30. But when you are, remember, the medical procedures always have to work. I guess that's part of it, right? But when you get up to number 30, they have all 30 up. There's someone who needs a liver right now at Mount Sinai Hospital. There are 1,000 people waiting for a liver. Some of them are going to die today. I knew a young person from Hungary, trying feverishly, and I must tell you, all the organ donation places, and I think organ donation is coming up soon, isn't it? All the organ donation, yeah, it's next. So this is my segue to next week, to Thursday. The organ donation programs are all clamoring to change the United States law. And I know they want this, and I want to have a good debate on this on Thursday, to change the United States law that you're not allowed to be paid for donating an organ. What's a kidney worth? Kidney, an eye, right? What if someone wants to pay me $20,000 for a kidney? What does he have to do? Because there are countries in the world where there are no such regulations, right? I'm going to tell you, mostly in Southeast Asia, somewhere in Africa, and they get people they get it on the black market. They go secretly. There are these clinics where they're able to They have specialists who can perform an operation. You can live with one kidney, right? So the organ donation places are giving, and all the both arguments are in these pages, right? I want you to come in next class being able to make these arguments, right? Because the argument for is obvious. Many more lives will be saved. People are waiting for a kidney. They're on dialysis. They are in distress. Dialysis isn't helping them anymore. They're about to die of renal failure. Right? Rav Moshe answered the Brown University study. He said it's wrong because that person, just by putting his name into a pool, does not become a rotator. He just assumes that if there are 4 billion people in this pool, that his name, what's the likelihood of my name getting called? Right? The same as winning the $600 million Powerball. It ain't happening. But it's going to happen to someone, right? So Rav Moshe says you can't, in this instance, because you don't say, well, I'm going to die anyway. Someone just brought that up before. You might have a heroic person in this room who says, just take me, right? Okay, but in that instance, none of those people say I'm dying anyway. But and look, the argument that the study makes is it's logical, because the odds of you getting chosen to give up your life to save those 30 are so minuscule, you'll live a much better life. Look, none of you are worried right now that your kidneys are going to fail, but maybe you know a great uncle who has such worries. I just spoke to someone who's on the basis, right? So if that person knew that is, if he gets put into that list of 30, that makes for a much more relaxing. I'm covered. If I ever need a lung transplant or even a heart transplant, I'm covered. Right? My secretary has had a heart transplant 15 years ago. She's doing great. Right? Someone died to get that. Right? But that would they give you a. Kidneys and eyes, that can last some time. Heart, lungs, liver. Someone had to die very quickly in a motorcycle accident or something like that. Just Amish on the spot. And then they have a card that says, yes, someone can take my heart, and then they bring it right over. All right, so this is just by way of a segue. What we're going to do next time is especially to discuss why do we have such a controversy in this school? Are you familiar? In this school, you have people who swear on a stack of Bibles that my approach is the correct approach about organ donation, and you have half the other side. Right? What's the basis of these arguments? Okay, so this is, I still want to say more about Rodef. This is more about Mesira. We still have some things to say about that. What is Mesira? Where you're Moser, life to someone else. And it's the answer is that our life is a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even ours. Is not ours to give up if it's not called for. I end today's presentation with where I began, with the Machteres, the guy digging in underground. Remember, we said that there's a difference between day and night. Because at night you're likely to find someone at home, and you have to understand you may confront someone, right? If you confront someone, that person may have a sword or a gun in his hand. So the give and take, the Torah wants to tell the homeowner, you have the right to kill him because ain lo dumin. So the Rishonim ask a question, what if it's Shabbos? You know, taking a life on Shabbos is one of the 39 malachos, right? Am I allowed to make a stand for my kiddush cups on Shabbos? Or do I have to stay upstairs and hide under my bed? So remember, you gave a shot in ain lo dumin. Right? So, ain lo dumin can mean there's no blood on the hands of the homeowner for taking out the robber. Right? But then the Gemara gave another pshat. Ain lo dumin means there's no blood in the man who's tunneling into your house. So now you see what the Rishonim say? You could even kill him on Shabbos. Why? They actually say this. If you kill a Baba Machteres on Shabbos, you have not committed the Tilas Neshama because yes, you're allowed to. The answer is that it's correct. If you see someone chasing after another person on Shabbos to kill him, you can't say, no, I'm not going to kill him, it's Shabbos. Of course not. Although I'm told that some of the guys in Murder 8 did not do their work on Shabbos. You know what I'm talking about? Chicago? Mayor Lansky and those guys, Murder for Hire? Yeah, they wouldn't kill on Shabbos. So you don't have to say, I'm not going to save that. You can't say, I'm not going to save that, but you still have the obligation to save the near death on Shabbos. But look at the lumdus. Someone chasing after someone else to kill him is already dead. Get it? If I go down to shoot that guy on Friday night who's stealing my Kiddush cups, I didn't kill somebody because he's already without blood. I didn't shed blood. He's dead already. Okay. All right, guys. That's our discussion. Read up these. And read up also on the topics on organ donation. There are 15 pages. And we're having he's supposed to come today, but I think he's coming on Thursday. We're having a guest presentation from Robbie Berman from Halakhic Organ Donation Society.
I forgot to say last week, I'm on the attendance list.
Why not? What's your name?
Kahan.
Well, I think you're in my other class.
Which one?
You're in the spot?
No, okay.
Sorry about that.
And when did you come in?
I was here I was here last week, starting last Tuesday.
Tuesday?
Yeah.
I'm not going to be here next Thursday.
This Thursday.
Not this coming Thursday? Oh, you're going to miss the presentation.
Yeah, I'm going out of town.
Oh, okay.
Is that assignment due this Thursday, though? Like number 3?
Number 3 is due Thursday. Thursday night.